President Rick Abono, the mouthpiece of our organization, the man who started as director of the Jernigan Institute after running a state affiliate in Wisconsin, driver of the Blind Driver Challenge car, and many more. We're really excited for him to speak to us tonight. Let's all raise our glass or give a toast to President Mark Rick Abono.
My daddy's president. We had a busy day. I'm learning the alphabet. A, B, C, D, J, F, K. I don't play house, I play the game of government. 'Cause my daddy is the president.
Very nice, very nice. Classic, as a matter of fact. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the introduction. You know, Dr. Tenbrook, our first president, is often quoted as saying, in the words of the cow on a cold morning, thank you for the warm hand. I'm here at the national office. I've actually switched from where I was earlier today. I am in the newly renovated space. I am in what we call our foyer. Across from where I'm sitting is a piece of art that is entitled Reflecting the Flame. And it is in honor of Mark Maurer and his leadership of this organization. And it has Braille lines of a speech that he gave in 1991 called Reflecting the Flame. Behind me over my right shoulder is a beautiful fireplace that does have a fire in it right now. It's just me and the fire, so there's no one to be socially distanced from. And to my left is our logo on the wall, a mosaic that was done by a deafblind artist. And behind me is our Diane and Ray McGeorge living room. If you haven't yet had the opportunity to come be in our new space, I can't wait till you can be here to do that. It's a beautiful, beautiful space. It speaks to both our past and our future, and it's meant to be a gathering space for the present. So I can't wait till you can be here. Before I start, though, I'm going to mute my JAWS announcements. I apologize. I did not do that. All right. So I'm sitting here by the fireplace, and it's a pleasure to talk to you about the nature of our organization. And I was sitting here thinking about Dr. Jernigan, who was our second great longtime leader. We're just a day or so away from the 22nd year since his passing. And the fireplace behind me here has a beautiful blue field stone surrounding it, which came from Dr. Jernigan's house. And so it's easy to come to this banquet and think about where we've been and the relationships that have had fueled this organization. So I think that's what I want to talk to you about this evening. You know, Aristotle is quoted as saying that for the things we have to learn before we can do them, we learn by doing them. And that's the nature of what I've learned in the National Federation of the Blind. You know, some people believe that mentoring is simply a give and receive process, while others believe that mentoring is the same as teaching. But we know from our experience in our organization that neither of these models is quite right. That is my experience in this organization, and I want to talk to you a little bit about my own experience, and frankly, I think the thousands of others around the National Federation of the Blind in our 80-year history. Our experience, and certainly my experience, is that it takes a willing mentor and a willing mentee, and that when it works, when it really works, the giving and receiving goes both ways. The learning goes both ways. And we've been blessed in this organization to have a lot of great leaders. But what's made it effective is that they've been able to receive, to learn, to be shaped by the members of this organization. I didn't always understand that view of mentoring, that process and what it looked like. And it didn't really appreciate it and the dynamics of it because, well, I didn't believe much in myself as a blind person. And that's the first thing that this organization did for me was give me that. So I guess in order to get there, I need to tell you a little bit about how I got there. And there are hundreds of stories I could share with you about that, and I'm going to try to keep a watch on the time here because I know we have some other things to get to this evening. I grew up in the great state of Wisconsin. Sorry, Indiana. And I did not know I was a blind person. I was diagnosed at age 5 as being legally blind from glaucoma and aniridia. So I've been blind all my life, effectively. But I didn't know I was a blind person. I just knew I couldn't see so well. And my parents, both hardworking Midwesterners, neither of them went to college. They didn't know anything about blindness. We didn't have any experience with blindness in our family. So they did the best that they could. They relied on the professionals to help guide what I should be doing as a person that couldn't see so well. And mostly what that meant is they just sent me out to do my thing. They expected me to go out and try stuff. And that's what I did. I learned from them to work really, really hard. And that was probably the greatest asset that they could have given me. I was also just smart enough to get by. And with those two things, I was able to push through a lot of stuff. And I figured that when you can't see so well, which is where I was at, you just had to work harder. That's what you had to do. I never knew I was a blind person. You kind of think about the world as balancing a scale. On one side, you have hope and opportunity, imagination, and on the other side, fear, uncertainty, anxiety. And when I was a kid, I had a lot of hope. I was excited. I had dreams, things I wanted to do. When I got into elementary school, I was outgoing. I wanted to find out about the world. But slowly over time, that changed. The balance changed. I did all the crazy things that kids do. I rode bikes. I was just telling my mom not too long ago. I don't know if she's tuned in tonight, but about some crazy things I used to do on a park near our house on a bike. I shouldn't have told my kids what I used to do because they might try them. You know, I jumped out of windows. I have no idea why we jumped out of windows. It was a thing to do, but we did it. Rode skateboards. I don't know, played with fireworks, all sorts of stuff. But as time went on, I got the message that seeing was really important, that being able to see was really important and sometimes essential. At least that's the message I thought I got. I started reading large print books in third grade. Didn't think anything of it. I had an O&M instructor, certified orientation mobility specialist. The first time I got an evaluation, Ron will appreciate this. Now, let me say that I walked to my elementary school. Both ways, uphill, by the way, starting in first grade. I don't think I walked in kindergarten, but in first grade. So I'd been walking to and from school for at least 2 years by the time I got to third grade. And in the summers, I played on those sidewalks. I mean, I went to school 6 blocks from my house. So the orientation mobility specialist took me out and walked me around the neighborhood. Figured out I was doing pretty good. Well, of course I was doing pretty good. I walked those streets every day. I didn't even need to see where the cracks were in the sidewalk. I knew them all just from being out there. It was a really poor evaluation, but decided I didn't need training. I didn't need services. And that's how it was for me. I was always allowed a pass. In fourth grade, you know, I clearly remember the vision teacher. That's what we used to call them, you know, vision teachers. She would come by and she would help me fill out worksheets. Really, she was kind of a high-priced reader. I didn't know that at the time. She didn't work with me on what non-visual skills I might use or how I would read or what else. She helped me fill out worksheets. And I couldn't read the worksheets because they were on mimeograph. They were done on a mimeograph machine. A certain generation tuned in tonight that I'll have to look that up on Wikipedia. Nobody could read them, not even the non-blind kids. By the time I got to fifth grade, I was losing hope. I couldn't read print. I didn't know about Braille. I couldn't read the large print books anymore. And I looked around for how I was going to read, and I had a monocular. That was the only magnification system I had. And so I used the monocular to read the large print books in class. Nobody said a word. Nobody said there was a better way to do it. So day after day, week after week, I got the notion that hope wasn't something for me, that fear, anxiety was more my, where my scale was going to balance. Now in sixth grade, you get interested in things like girls and football. And so I remember very clearly in sixth grade, we had to run a U-shaped pattern in gym class. And when you got to the peak of the U, you had to catch the football. And now I knew how to run and I knew what a U was. And I knew there was a football coming my way. And so I would try, just like Charlie Brown. You know, I would try. I would run. And I'd put my hands up. And I had no chance of catching the football. My teacher sat me down because I was upset. The kids were making fun of me. And he said, don't worry. Someday you'll get contacts and everything will be okay. It was a lie. And it added to my fear and anxiety. And it diminished my hope. And that's how my elementary and my middle school and into my high school experience was. And I could tell you hundreds of horror stories. I could tell you about going to prom, but I won't. It's a lot funnier in person when you actually do get to laugh at me. I didn't know what was possible. And by the way, I didn't even know there were other blind people till I got to high school. I happened to choose a high school because it specialized in business. And I thought business would be cool. I had an entrepreneurial spirit. I had enough hope to be, still want to be an entrepreneur. And I know we got a lot of blind vendors in this affiliate. So I'm with you. I'm kindred spirit in that regard. And so I chose this high school and it happened to be they had a resource room for blind students. I didn't know what that meant. Wasn't why I picked it. But they had a teacher there. He had RP and, he ran the resource room. He had RP, but he read Braille with his eyes in the little limited range of vision he had. And so I quickly learned from him and from others that although I was around other blind kids, I wasn't like them. And I'm ashamed to admit it. I was either smarter than they were. I worked harder than all of them, or I could see better than they could, which wasn't really saying much. And so I didn't find a kindred spirit with them. And I looked up to my teacher. He was my mentor. He was my friend. He was funny. He was interesting. He let us do cool things that we weren't supposed to do. And he's actually the reason I went to the University of Wisconsin. I thought I was going to have to go to some second-rate university like Illinois or something. But he got me to realize I was smart enough to get into the University of Wisconsin. And he took me there. I was a senior in high school. The first time I saw this guy who was my mentor use a white cane. I was with him for 3 years. Never knew. The mentoring opportunities that were lost. I was sent into the University of Wisconsin with really not enough skills. I couldn't read Braille. I didn't know Braille. I didn't know what Braille was. I was offered Braille when I was a senior in high school because this radical group of blind people, the National Federation of the Blind of Wisconsin, was fighting for a Braille bill. My teacher said, you know, we can teach you Braille if you want to learn it. Now, that's not what a mentor is supposed to do. A mentor is supposed to tell you why it's important and what it'll do in your life. That didn't happen. And I had two study halls. I had worked hard to have two study halls my senior year. So I thought about it for about half a second. Do I want to learn Braille? No, can't think of a reason. So I didn't. I went to the University of Wisconsin, but I still had hope. I wanted to do things. I wanted to be part of the community. I wanted to get out and experience the world. But every time I tried, scales would tip toward fear. I had to study all of the time because I just did not have the skills to compete. So I was studying all the time, but I'd get brave and I'd say, nope, tonight I'm going out. This is the night I'm going to do it. I don't care. It's time to get out on the town. And the guys would say, we're going to a party. Do you want to come? Yep. I'm going with you. I did, by the way, get a very short cane when I graduated from high school. I didn't know what to do with it, so it sat in the closet. So when the guy said, do you want to go out? I'd say, sure. And I'd follow behind as closely as I could with looking like I could see stuff. And they would invariably take a shortcut. And the shortcut would usually go through some area like over railroad tracks or something. And I'd stumble and fall. And you know what is so funny? I would just decide, yeah, I didn't want to go anyway. I really didn't want to go. I convinced myself that I didn't want to go. I was good at it. I was good at faking it, and the person I faked the most was me. And I didn't have mentors that taught me otherwise. I didn't have mentors that pushed me. I didn't have people that told me the truth, that thought enough of me to give me the hard news that I could do better, but also that blindness wasn't the thing that was going to hold me back. And that didn't happen until I got to 1996. I had just finished my sophomore year, and I had been applying for scholarships from the National Federation of the Blind for a number of years. And luckily, I was the only applicant that year for a Wisconsin state scholarship. I don't know if it's actually true. I just like to say that. And they said, you got to get on an airplane and come to Anaheim, California to our national convention. I'd barely ever been out of Wisconsin. I'd been to Minnesota and I'd been to Illinois now and then, but I certainly hadn't flown across the country by myself. They said, you got to show up. So I got out my dusty, horrible, short white cane and I got on an airplane and I went to Anaheim, California with no mentors, little hope, but I needed money. And I showed up at the Anaheim Hilton and the scales started to instantly tip the other way. I met mentors. I met people who didn't know me. They were interested in me. They were interested in me because I was a blind person and they knew I needed what they had and they wanted to give it to me. They wanted to give me the information, the techniques, the hope, what had been given to them. They wanted to pay it forward to somebody else. And that happened with every single person I met. And not only did they want to give me the information, they helped me out. I had to get a reader, you know, to read the agenda because I couldn't read print. I couldn't read Braille. I had to get a Braille reader to read me the agenda. Every single person I met instantly became my mentor. And so I wanted to start helping out. I didn't really understand mentoring or how it worked or why, but I knew that if I was being given all this stuff that I didn't really understand yet, I needed to give back. So I jumped in, started helping out with the student division. I had ideas. I came back. I wrote a letter to the president of the National Federation of the Blind. I sent it off to Baltimore about how excited I was about all this stuff that I had never known. And darn it if I didn't get an answer a month later. And the letter said something very simple. It said, you need to learn about our organization, what we do, why we do it. And then you need to start teaching others about it. And if you do that, you'll learn something about yourself. And then once you start teaching others about the organization, start taking your ideas and putting it into the organization. Start changing the organization with your ideas. Start teaching me, is what Mark Maurer said to me just a month after I found this organization. I didn't know till much later that there was a reason for that. Mentoring. What we give to each other is the most important element that we have in this movement. Jacobus Ten Broeck, our first president, brilliant scholar of constitutional law, wrote the foundations of what has come to be every civil rights piece of legislation for people with disabilities in this nation. He had a mentor. Newell Perry, a smart blind guy who couldn't get a job, had a PhD in mathematics and could not get a job because of the discrimination that existed and the low expectations for blind people at the time. So what did he do? He took a job at the School for the Blind and dedicated his life to teaching young blind people that they can do anything they want and they can take over the world. And he taught Jacobus Ten Broeck that, and he built the most powerful organization for blind people that's ever existed, and it's still here today. And Dr. Ten Broeck mentored hundreds of people, thousands probably. He came across Kenneth Jernigan, who didn't know what possibilities there were, thought he would work in Tennessee, do a little teaching, until he met Dr. Ten Broeck, who taught him there was something more to know. And the chain of mentoring has happened like that through this organization, and it has touched all of us. I could talk to you all evening about the mentors that I've had in this organization, but I want to talk to you about why I keep it up, why mentoring is still important. Because you may look at me and say, well, it's great. You were blind early in life. It's easy for you. You've been doing this a long time now, and now you're president of the National Federation of the Blind. There's nowhere else for you to go. But that's just simply not the way mentoring works. And if 2020 has taught us anything, it should be that we all can do better, and we all can do better together. One of my mentors in this movement was Dr. Betsy Zaborowski, someone that influenced this very space I'm sitting in, even though she never even knew we were going to build it. She wasn't here for it. She was the first executive director of our Jernigan Institute, and she was one of my mentors. She died of cancer in 2007, and when she came down with cancer, our president at the time, Mark Maurer, I can't really say he asked me to be executive director. He told me I was going to be executive director. Betsy was a dynamic woman. She had a huge heart, and she believed in blind people completely, and she believed in the power of this organization because she lived it. But here's what I want you to know about Betsy. She helped engineer a program that we sparked in 2006 called the NFB Youth Slam. And I was the director of education, and she came to me and said, let's take a walk. And we walked through the members hall, which is a big 16,000 square foot ballroom that we have here in our building. And she said, we need to fill this room with blind kids. We need to have the largest gathering of blind people that's ever existed. I said, okay, I take that as an order. And we put together the NFB Youth Slam, which has completely transformed the way we think about impacting youth in this country and mentoring. Never been done before. And blind people turned out from all corners of the Federation. Certainly blind people that had no business wanting to spend a week in a college dorm with high school students. But why'd they do it? Because of what this movement has given them and what mentors have given to them in their life. And shortly after that was the last time I got to spend time with Betsy in this building. And she came by my office, which had been her office, and she said, "You got it all figured out?" And I said, "Oh yeah, got it all figured out." She looked across the desk at me and said, "Don't worry, I didn't have it all figured out either. You will." She understood something that I didn't understand then, but I do understand now, that the faith that we have in each other, the ability to know each other in a real way, and the love that we have to not only share with each other, but learn from each other, grow together, and trust that we'll grow in a way that is going to make this organization proud. That's the faith we have. That's the element that we have that, frankly, I don't think there are many other organizations and movements out there that have that, at least that I've been a part of. And that's why I'm here this evening, because I need you. I need your imagination, your talents, your diversity to keep improving me. And we've already experienced at this convention some of my favorite people in this organization. I'm not going to name them because I know I'm going to miss somebody. But take, for example, Jean Brown. Now, you all know Jean Brown, and her husband's okay, too. Jean Brown's husband, you know. And Micah Ball. I could tell you stories about Micah Ball when she first came to one of our science programs, but it would be better in person. so many people. And even though we're socially distanced, even though we have to do this virtually where we can't slap each other on the back and we can't laugh in the way that we want to from trying to find the stupid ballroom and taking the wrong turn or whatever it is, I know that this gathering gives the feeling of love, hope, and faith that we share in this movement. And there's so much more we need to do together. And that's why I keep showing up. My son Austin was born in 2006. And my daughter Oriana was born in 2010. Now, I had been working on the education of blind children by that time for about 10 years. It's my 20th year of working in the field. And I went to pick Oriana up. They checked her out. And they said, you know, on Monday, this was a Saturday, on Monday we want you to go see a pediatric ophthalmologist because Oriana's eyes don't respond as they should. And my heart stopped. Not because of blindness, but because I knew what to do about that. But because I remembered how it felt when the scales were tipped the other way. I remembered the weight of that feeling, and I didn't want that for Oriana. And I realized how much work we still had to do, and I had been doing it for 10 years, and it didn't feel like it was better. And so I doubled down on this organization and what we need to do together. And I have been blessed and surprised every time I do that, because I get back, as hard as I work, as much as I try to put in, I always get back more than I expect. And I'm not looking to get back. I'm looking to give back. But at every turn, I'm blessed and surprised. That's why I keep showing up. And by the way, it doesn't matter if you were blind at age 5 like me, or if you went blind yesterday and you're 55. This journey is the same. And if you contribute to this movement, you'll have the same experience. And we can see things get better together. And we can be better together. And that is an amazing experience. And I'm inviting you tonight to continue on that journey with me. Not just for me and not just for you, for my daughters, Oriana and Elizabeth, for all the other blind kids that are coming up and struggling with the stupid technologies that aren't accessible, for all of the people that are turning 18 this year who are blind and can't vote because the politicians are interested in people not voting rather than making the vote available to everybody. And I really want to call upon you to recognize what we can do when we bond together in this community to build something we have never before imagined. Like the space I'm in here today. We bought this warehouse building 40 some years ago. The Federation was broke, and now we've remodeled it for the second time in 40 years into one of the most beautiful spaces in any building in Baltimore. That's all from the love, hope, and determination that we have in this organization. And it's an example of what we're going to do together. I'm sitting here in history, Dr. Maurer and his influence, Dr. Jernigan and his influence, Dr. Tenbrook's fire tools over here, Diane and Ray McGeorge have built the Colorado Center for the Blind, and so many other people. The big question is, what are we going to do? This has been handed to us. What are we going to do with it? One interesting thing about new spaces is the lights. So if you sit still long enough, they go out. what are we going to do with it? We get to decide. And I hope you're going to come be part of it. I hope you're going to walk on this journey with me to imagine what we're going to do next. I don't know about you, but when I think about 2020 and all of the stuff, the thing that gives me hope, energy, and love is participating in the National Federation of the Blind, because my expectations are raised. And I get to celebrate the realization of our dreams with you. So I appreciate being here tonight, the opportunity to talk to you about a couple of my mentors. I could talk for a long time about others. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be mentored by you, to be shaped by you in the work that you're doing in this organization. And as your elected president, that I take that seriously. And I'm forever grateful for what you're doing. And for the commitments I know you're going to make to this movement going forward. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I know we have some other things to do tonight, so I'm going to leave it there and say, please join me on this journey. Help to shape what I'm doing. Allow me the blessing of giving whatever knowledge and experience I have to shaping you. And let's go build the National Federation of the Blind. Thank you.